Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. My guest today is Debbie Wilson Berment, otherwise known as Chef Saga Joe, author of The Saga Joe Experience, Recipes for Lifestyle and Entertaining, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. For everything about the chef, go to chefsagajoe.com, and you can follow her on Instagram. And Chef, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ira, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure. Do you ever get confused where people call you by your various names and they get them all mixed up? Or is it just me that might happen too because of the pollen?
No, it happens very often to me. The Berment sounds like Vermont or Bermant. You know? So it does. It happens often.
Well, I was intrigued by your early stages in life growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, correct?
Tobago, yeah.
Or you Tobago.
Tobago. Tobago is fine. Tobago, okay. Tobago. That's fine.
You say tomato, I say tomato, but the fruit gets cut, and it is a fruit, not a vegetable. Not Trinidad, but tomato. And so I'll say Tobago. Either way, it works. And you helped your mother out in the kitchen there. Her name was Alma, right? Or is it Alma?
Yes. You got that right.
Alma. Okay. And so this is your first introduction to food, is working in the kitchen with your mother.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about your mother.
So she is, you know, she introduced me to it at a very, very early age. I'm talking like, 9 years old. You know, I grew up with her as she was a chef, and she used to do quite a lot of catering. And that's where I think I found the love for it, because, you know, each day helping her do different things in the kitchen, learning to do different things in the kitchen with her was amazing. I think, you know, I found my true love with food through my mother.
Did you ever have a sense? I never asked anybody this question, but I'm always intrigued by people that grew up in that kind of household. Was there ever an issue of food scarcity or food shortage, or was there always an abundance of food because your mother was a chef?
You know what? There was always an abundance, and that's a great question. You know, because she catered for so many people. It was like an everyday thing. So whatever she would cook or she would cater, she would make in bulk. So there would always be tons of food, you know, a food line with all different kinds of foods and fruits and vegetables. So no, there was no scarcity. It was an abundance.
Which is great. So you grew up in a secure childhood and a secure household.
Yes, I did. I certainly did.
You could have been a doctor or a lawyer or a chef. And so of the three, you picked chef. So
I did.
Did your mom know you were going to choose that field?
I think she had an idea that I was heading in that direction. When I migrated and we moved to the United States, I decided to take my love of food and take it so that it will serve me better. So I enrolled in culinary school. And it was amazing for me because growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, it's tropical fruits that I'm dealing with in Trinidad and Tobago. So I come into this whole new world here in the United States of America. And the fruits and the vegetables were just so amazing. Some of them I didn't know what to do with, but I learned. And going to culinary school really helped me to understand the world of culinary. And that was amazing.
When you started to go to school and learn about all these new things in America, were you able to merge the cultures easily?
You know, it was a bit difficult, but yes, blending the flavors and the spices together to create a delicious meal, that was a little challenging. But I was up for the challenge. And I stuck with my guns, going to culinary school, working hard, figuring out what to do with all these wonderful ingredients. And it was wonderful.
Was there a chef or two that were your mentors? I don't want to say heroes, but that's a term that's easily thrown around. But perhaps some famous American chefs or chefs from other countries that were your mentors?
There was a whole, see, when you go to culinary school, it's not more than one. You deal with a whole team of chefs coming in, some teaching you pastry, some teaching you about meats, about different vegetables. You know, I think Chef Glenn stood out to me. He helped me quite a bit. And I loved the fact that he liked that I was from the Caribbean. So there were things that I would say, can I put in a pinch of this or a pinch of that? You know, it would make it, he would giggle. He would say, well, this is not going to be what it's supposed to be, but let's try it. You know, he was always willing to go that extra mile with me.
Well, this may be a naive question, but is Chef Glenn his first name, his last name, or is it, what is it when you say Chef Glenn?
We just called him Chef Glenn. I actually never knew what his full name was.
Okay, well, that, yeah, I'm glad I asked the question. So, okay, just Chef Glenn. A shout out to Chef Glenn. So once you went through culinary school, how did you decide on the path you would take? And I want to talk about your book in a couple of minutes, but how did you decide a specific path in that world? Was it you wanted to remain true to your roots, or you wanted to go a synthesis of different food cultures? How did you decide how you wanted to handle that?
So what was interesting is definitely I took the challenge in doing pastry because it was harder than cooking for me. And so I ended up deciding that I wanted to go the pastry route because to me, the cooking route was much more easier. So I did all and I graduated with more of a pastry because I wanted to learn that, because I wanted to understand the different measurements, and it would keep me in track of, you know, instead of a pinch of this and a pinch of that, I needed to have control. One cup of this, two cups of that. So I did go into that role because the cooking was much more easier for me. So I like that, you know.
It's interesting. Pastry, yeah, pastry is, in other words, baking, which requires precise measurements, versus cooking, which gets a little bit more, a pinch of this, as you say, a pinch of that. Where does the creativity come in pastries and in baking when the measurements are so exact? So how do you distinguish yourself if everybody can just do a half a cup of this, a cup of that, a tablespoon of that, and get the same results?
You know, that's a great question. So this is what I do. If I am making something that everybody else makes, like a, let's just say a pastry, like a cake. Mm-hmm. So I will definitely add a different spice to it to make it my own. The flavor profile in the different spices, I'll even throw in a couple of lavender, a couple of herbs in there just to make it my own, to get that flavor profile to be mine. And that's it's challenging because it doesn't always work, but I love the challenge.
That's where the creativity comes in, then.
That's where the creativity comes in, yes.
Well, I'll be expecting a box of your creations in the near future.
Based you got on it.
Our previous history, which I won't get into on the show.
Got it, Ira.
So you're actually were known professionally by the age of 16 as a chef, which is pretty impressive.
Yes, in my home country, definitely. You know, doing things for different people. Even my mom trusted me at that point. She was like, okay, I have this cake order to do. I think I'm going to let you do this, but I'm going to be monitoring you. So, you know, she really started me off. She encouraged me. She helped me. She put me in the direction. And I just took it up to the next level by going to culinary school and making her proud.
How long does culinary school take when you go through
it? I went to culinary school for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Some people go longer, some people go less. It depends on what you want to do and how far you want to take it. You can go as far as you want.
Because you realize 3 years as long as law school. That's pretty impressive when you think about it.
It is. It is.
When you went to culinary school, so what did you... As you talked about earlier, you decided to go into the world of pastries, but clearly you had a broader education in that school and you're able to learn how to do all of the things that one does who wants to become a chef.
Yeah.
Are people who, I know this is going to sound odd, but if you are specializing in pastries, for example, mm-hmm. Is it's still considered you're a chef, even if it's pastries versus other kinds of preparations?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's there's a word for it. You know, they call you the pastry chef, gourmet chef, chef de cuisine, you know, le cordon bleu chef, different things. There are some chefs that can't bake because they didn't like pastry because it was too precise for them. Measurements are difficult, you know, things flop in the oven, you know, if you don't get it right. But I liked the challenge of doing that because, like I said, it was easier for me to cook. So I wanted to learn to bake. I wanted to learn to do all these different wonderful things that I was seeing in these bakery shops all over. And that is what led me. And I feel happy about that because now it has made me all rounded. I feel good that I can say I can do a dessert, I can make a complete meal for entertaining my friends and family.
So now you decide to write a book, The Saga Jo Experience: Recipes for Lifestyle and Entertaining. And why did you decide to write the book? Did you want to share the wealth, in a sense, the pastry wealth, or the recipe wealth of what you've learned over the years?
You know, it's something that's been on my heart for the longest while. This book has been on my mind and my heart to do from since I think the children were little. And you know, I was too busy. I was too busy working, being a mom, and being a CEO of the household. So when I finally got the opportunity, kids are grown, they're away. I'm a private chef now. I don't work in the country clubs anymore. So I decided to take it up. I decided to do my dream. I always wanted to do it. So here it is. And I couldn't put the computer down and I continued writing until the Saga Jo experience was worth it.
Did you ever spill flour on the computer?
Oh, you're talking about everything. I had to get a new computer. Not
Yes,
just flour. There was
I'm
milk
aware
and
of
water
that.
and juice. Definitely.
Yeah, I think your next pastry project will be a cake in the shape of a computer. I think that will work out well. So,
That's a good one.
how did you organize this book? Not the cake, but how did you organize the book in terms of your approach and in the sequence of chapters?
So, you know, this is where, you know, people eat with their eyes. And you know what you see, what you'd love to eat, you'd love to take it, you'd love to touch it and eat it. So I decided to do a variation of foods because also the foods that I entertain my own family and friends with, because the book is just not about the food that I cook in the book or the recipes that I give to you in the book, but it's also about the dining experiences. So let me give you an example. For instance, my husband, he travels quite often for work, so he's not at home all the time. So things like breakfast in bed, you'll find in the book where I make him, you know, he loves blueberry pancakes. So you know, there's a blueberry pancake recipe in there. I create the ambiance and the experience of dining in bed, spending time with your loved ones in bed. These moments I captured from me to put into my book. You can make it your own, but there are recipes to guide you along with it. And definitely, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to bring that dining experience, to you with all these wonderful recipes.
Although I don't think you could, if somebody has a water bed, that would be kind of tricky to have breakfast in a water bed. You might get a little
Only
seasick.
you, Ira. Only you.
You can just see
I
that.
will try that out and see how that works.
Yeah, please do. Or maybe you can replicate it on a cruise and see how that works, since it's a similar sense in that sense. What's your favorite recipe in the book?
I really don't have a favorite
Oh, yes, you
recipe,
do. Come on, you
to
chef,
be
you.
honest with you, but I'm telling you this. The rack of lamb is my family's favorite. They love lamb. And for me, the lamb is special because I use culinary lavender. It's something beautiful, it's fragrant. And so when that lamb is baking in the oven, you get that sense, that smell throughout the house. So yeah, I would say the lamb is part of my favorite recipe. There's also a duck recipe in the book, which is one of my favorites too. So, you know, I would say, listen, all those recipes in the book, they're my favorites. That's why I did the book.
Yeah, of course. You know? So when you have an argument with your husband and you throw the duck at him, does he duck? I'm just curious.
Yeah, he better duck, right?
Yeah, I think so. With all of the kitchen appliances you must have as a professional chef, even at home, I'm just curious what your favorite cooking appliance, and I use that term broadly or loosely, your cooking appliance is. It's probably your brain because you know all the different things to make. But is there one type of, whether it's a, I'll just use an example, the oven or air fryer or mixer or blender?
So my mixer is like one of my favorite things, okay, because, you know, cooking, baking, I do a lot of stuff in it. But I would say my knives too, you know, because it's always in my hand. I'm always cutting something, chopping something, dicing something, creating something. So yeah, I mean, I love my kitchen tools. I'm in my favorite place right now.
Who are listening but are not watching, yes, you have a wonderful kitchen in the background. I want to just let our listeners know as well as the viewers can see. Yes, it's very clean too, which is unlike most people's kitchens. So
I cleaned it up for you, Ira.
I was about to say, thanks for cleaning up for the occasion. You have a little flower in your hair. Did you notice that? No, I'm only kidding. So when you're cutting out, you mentioned knives, and that, I always like to bring this up. Some people are a little afraid of knives, and they think that it's better for a knife to be not so sharp so they don't accidentally cut themselves. But clearly, a sharpened knife is a lot safer than a unsharpened knife.
Absolutely right. A dull knife can do a lot of damage. Trust me. You know, just do the knuckle thing, you know?
Yeah.
Do it on the knuckles. Don't put your fingers in the way, you know? You need to put your knuckles so that, you know, it's against it. It's going against.
Exactly. You know? I learned that in a knife class to cut it with it, and I've never had a problem since. So
exactly right.
Yeah. But these little tips and tricks, though, are part of the essential aspect of cooking and baking and pastries, etc. When you put the cookbook together, did you call the family in and say, okay, look, I'm writing this fabulous cookbook, but I want you all to make sure that everything I put in the book is what it's supposed to be. So here, I'm making this dish, taste it, make sure there's no problem with it, or we need to add something to it. Did you do that? Or because your background, you didn't have to do that?
Oh, no, you always have to test your recipes. I mean, like over and over and over. Of course, recipe has to be tested, you know, when you do.
But I mean, I guess my question is, did you use your family as guinea pigs?
Not just my family. I use my friends as my guinea pig, which they loved that I use them as a guinea pig.
In the book. The guinea pigs are one of the recipes in your book, from what I understand.
Yeah, I fried it.
But you got obviously positive results from everybody that were your guinea pigs. So it makes perfect sense. What of all the recipes in the book, what's the simplest and what's the most complicated?
So I think one of the simplest, there is muffins in the book. Muffins are pretty simple to make. Then there is a pumpkin bread that's pretty easy to make. So there are easy things. There's the pancake, pretty easy to make. No fuss, no muss. I think one of the hardest things probably in my book would be the duck recipe. Or the brisket, because there's a wonderful brisket recipe inside the book as well. So, you know, most things are not difficult. You know, just follow along and, you know, and create it. Just don't be nervous when you're in a kitchen cooking. Just, you know, dive into it. Try to enjoy the moment. If you don't enjoy when you're in the kitchen, then it's not for you. You know, just enjoy the moment.
Do you think you've met people who initially didn't enjoy their moment in the kitchen, but eventually it kicked in and they decided, you know what, this is actually fun?
Yeah, I actually had friends that didn't like the kitchen. And since they have been, you know, coming to my house and, you know, they cook with me, I said, come on, you know, I'm making so-and-so today. Come on, help me. And, you know, they would go home and do this thing. And said, you know what, I didn't like cooking that much, but now I do, you know. So, I do turn people around a little.
The worst part for me is the cleaning up. So can you come over to my house and clean up after I finish using your recipes?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. That, to me, that's work. So
You're on your own. You're on your own for that.
I know, I that's the part I don't like. But in your book, you talk about too, in terms of settings, it's not just the food, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, it's the settings you choose, the stemware you use, flowers perhaps. Is it formal or informal? Tell us a
Yes.
little bit about that aspect of the book.
So the food is one thing, but when you're having company or you're having your family dinners or whatever, and you're having people over to your home, I think one of the most important things is to start setting the ambiance. And the ambiance goes a long way. It's pleasurable. You set with flowers, candles, the simplest of things can make the difference. Stemware is important. I like pairing my wine. In my book, there is a little bit about wine pairing. I'm not a wine connoisseur, but I do love to have, good wines with pairing with the food. It makes all the difference and it makes it personalized. Your guests feel that they're special. And I think this is how everybody should feel when they come to your house, not just a chef's house, but for the person who's entertaining and cooking, you know what I mean?
Sure, but where did you learn that though? Because that I don't think you would learn that necessarily when you went to the classes in the school, right?
Absolutely not, no. But where I did learn that was when I was at home and I used to, invite people to my home. I used to try setting up, doing all these different things on my own. And I fell in love with that as well, making, preparing the food and setting the table. You spend so much time in the kitchen preparing all this wonderful food. Why not, display this wonderful food in this wonderful setting? Give people a beautiful glass, a beautiful plate. Sometimes the simplest things are setting up in the kitchen area. It doesn't have to be fancy, but some really nice casual plating, some nice glasses. Informal, formal, whatever it is, just make it nice. Just make it a little bit pretty, a little bit jazzy, and your guest is going to love it.
So
You would love it.
each meal, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, becomes an experience.
Yes, exactly. And
So,
why not?
why not? And based on your suggestion, so I should have all the beer bottles lined up in a row on the table then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely not. Some glasses will do, a beautiful little pail, put the beers in, have them looking a little fancy, drop some ice cubes on there, but makes all
Right.
the difference.
Do you envision your book being propped up in the kitchen as people go through one of your recipes, or do you think that they look at it and then go to the kitchen? In other words, are you okay with somebody getting a little, as we mentioned earlier, a little flower instead of on the computer on your book, so they're working with your recipes?
That would be good because then I would know they're actually using my book and that will
Right.
make me feel good. So yeah, a little flower, a little whatever, just follow the recipe. Buy the book, follow the recipe, cook the food, entertain.
Was there one dish that you decided to experiment with that you were going to originally include in the book, but then turned out, nah, you know what? It's not getting raves from the family or the neighbors or the friends that are coming over. It's not getting raves from my husband who still sticks with the blueberry pancakes in bed. Is there one of those dishes you just decided, now, you know what? I'm not going to put it in the book?
Sure. There are lots of other things that I, chose not to put in the book. One, because I'm going to be writing another book. So why put all in this one book, right? But yeah, there are
Exactly.
things
All
that
right.
you want to be out. So there will be part two, right?
Well, no, wait a second, though. I don't mean the good recipes that that you'll use for the second book, but any that you decided, you know what, I thought this would be good, but you know what, we're not going to put it in any book.
No,
Okay.
really,
Okay.
I haven't. I haven't. Most of my recipes or most what is in the book, I want to put something that I really like, that I entertain with. I show you in the book that I'm entertaining my family and this is what my family likes. This is what I cook. So I think, choosing what I like, and you know, hopefully people would like it as well. So yeah, not really. I you know, I try not to do foods that people don't like. I try to do foods that people would like, you know.
Makes sense. Before I let you go, tell us about the world of private chefs.
The world of private chefs, I love it. I love it because it gives me my own time. My clientele, I love my clientele. It's a whole, it's very different to working, you know, at a restaurant or working in a country club or working, you know, on a cruise ship, because you get to spend time with your clientele. You get to learn your clientele, what their likes, what their dislikes. It's very intimate. And I think that's where, that's what I like doing. I like that private, you know, consultation one-on-one, giving you the best, you know, that I can give to you. So that is, yeah, I love that, you know.
Are your clients aware of the book you just wrote?
Oh, yes, they are very much aware. Yeah, as a matter of fact, they do have the book already.
So. I would imagine so. And do they want you to sign it?
Yes, of course.
And
yes.
Dust flour over it so it looks like it's already being used?
I hope so.
Well, good luck with the book. That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Debbie Wilson Bermont, otherwise known as Chef Saga Joe, author of The Saga Joe Experience, Recipes for Lifestyle and Entertaining. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about the chef, go to chefsagajoe.com, and you can follow her on Instagram. Chef, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ira. It was fun.
Fun here, too. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.